This is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us for another episode. Today's guest is a former professional wrestler and son of the legendary Cowboy Bill Watts, Eric Watts. Eric is on the show today. An over an hour long interview and chat with Eric. So much fun. He talks about everything with his career, talks about growing up with Bill Watts as a father, so much more. So you're going to want to check that out later in the show. Before we get there, make sure you subscribe and follow us on social media. You can follow me on Twitter, which is now known as X, at The Dave Dynasty. Make sure you subscribe to me on YouTube, youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty. The best way to support the show financially is to support us by buying a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. And make sure wherever you listen to this podcast that you rate, review, share, subscribe, do all those things. The show is available on all podcast platforms, so you have a plethora of choices out there on where to listen. Before we get to the interview, just a couple of quick plugs. In 2024, the WFIA, which is the Wrestling Fans International Association, will be holding a three-day virtual convention. This will be held on September 13th, 14th, and 15th. Lots of great guests already lined up. Maybe a few more to be announced. Who knows? More information is to come, but be sure to join today for all the perks and the latest news and to keep abreast of this convention. You can visit the WFIA.org to join. It is free to sign up. And you can also go on Facebook and join the WFIA Facebook group, the Wrestling Fans International Association. So go do those things. Check it out. Make sure you sign up for the virtual convention when it comes up in September. It's going to be a lot of fun. And while you're out there doing things, checking out things, make sure you check out the Ultimate Classic Wrestling, which is featuring the Sovaldi Library. You can go to classicwrestling.net or you can download their app on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, iOS mobile, Android mobile. Pretty much anywhere that you watch streaming services, you can find their app. There's tons of great classic wrestling footage on there. More is being added all the time. I highly suggest you go check it out. It is more than worth the subscription rate to sign up. So go, once again, to classicwrestling.net and sign up now. All right, let's take a quick break and then get right to it because, like I said, we got a lot to talk about with Eric Watts. So we'll be right back. You stick around. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams. All right, welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by second-generation wrestler Eric Watts. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great, my friend. Doing great.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. The first question, man, the first thing that obviously jumps to my mind, what was it like growing up with Bill Watts as a dad?
Thank you for asking me that. It's a crazy question. So I will try to pare it down because we got like 45 minutes to an hour and it would take me an hour just to break the ice on that one.
All right.
There's so many different ways to say it. I think he was, and not just I, talking to Jerry Jarrett, talking to Vince McMahon, talking to Grams, Ganyas. There's so many people would sit me aside and say, your father is the single greatest promoter, booker, and one of the greatest wrestlers of all times. That was coming from, I remember when I was at TNA, Jerry Jarrett, and mm-hmm. me and him just breaking bread, just sitting out in the stands. The ring set up, because you got to be there like 5-6 hours before a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And we're just talking life. And him saying that to me. And then Vince McMahon and so many other people saying that, like verbally saying that. So it's not just my, it's just not what I think. So you had that part of it. But then if you hear any of the stories of guys that worked in my dad's territory, I believe there's certain things that are synonymous with Cowboy Bill Watts. One, Mid-South Sports and Universal Wrestling Federation. The road was brutal as mm-hmm. far as distance and driving. Yep. I mean, the guys were putting, 1,000, 1,500 miles a week on their cars, right? Which yep. means on your bodies and you're performing. And I remember Once they got to Oklahoma City, they would do double shots. My dad would run Oklahoma City in the morning and Tulsa at night. So there was just a lot. And he was known as as being brutal. Mm-hmm. I mean, from his rules were his rules. He did not care. He did not deviate. His fines were huge. But also his coaching, what I called coaching, they didn't call it coaching, was intense. I mean, you know, Bear Bryant, Shem Beckler, I mean, going back to the greats, in your face, in your ears, like it didn't matter how bad, what a bad, you know, how tough a guy was, you could see people kind of like shake a little bit when he was talking to you.
Yeah.
And what's funny is sometimes guys would walk off and then, you know, I'd run into someone, they go, "I'm so sorry, son." You know, I'm just so sorry. And I would laugh and I'd go, "Oh, my dad is so kind here at the matches. You should see him at home." And they just look at me. They wouldn't know what to say. They're like, "What?" You know, which helped me later on, because by the time I broke into wrestling, there was a lot of guys at WCW that I had known since, you know, I was a child or in my teens or whatever. And so they saw how my dad even treated us children as far as, you know, working in the business, as far as setting up the rings, doing this, doing that. He was always intense, always, you know, very seldom did he not, was he talking and not yelling at the same time, put it that way. Yeah. So I think a lot of the guys, by the time I went into wrestling, the guys that had been around my father, there was no one of those guys saying, you know, "That kid didn't pay his dues."
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you brought up a good point, man. I mean, he set the standard for, you know, promoting and booking, but so many people forget his in-ring career all they know is, you know, his booking in Mid-South. But man, Bill Watts was a star, was a draw everywhere prior to that.
Yeah, everywhere. I mean, from and now I don't know if this is, well, it hadn't changed, but I'm saying I for years and years and years, I'd heard that, you know, my father wrestled for Vince Senior when it was WWE, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, and it wasn't just pro wrestling, it was the concerts and everything, that my father and Bruno Sammartino held the fastest sellout pre-electronic tickets of any event that went into Madison Square Garden.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is kind of odd. I mean, it's as odd. Well, there's two or three different reasons though. Okay. So if you lived in if you lived in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Georgia, then he was just, celebrated as one of the greatest, if not the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yep.
But then there were people that once he became president of WCW that did not know his wrestling, not those territories, that, you know, WCW went nationwide. And, mm-hmm. and so then they would start looking up things about him. They knew he was a wrestler, but then they knew him as Cowboy Bill Watts, the promoter, booker, president of WCW. Then when he went to WWE and then is inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, the WWE people that were watching during that time that looked him up heard so much about him as a booker, promoter, you know, and wrestling was absolutely mentioned, but it's not the same as watching him wrestle and being at events.
Right.
You know, and so when he was wrestling, there were still like, what, 23 territories.
Yeah,
But I see that all the time. You know, even as a kid, you know, in Mid-South, you wouldn't hear people talking about how awesome Vern Gagne was.
Right. Yeah.
You wouldn't hear him talking about how great Eddie Graham was. You know, the only reason why they would mention that is when my dad would talk about, you know, Eddie being a mentor, or Gagne being a mentor, or my dad being brilliant enough to co-promote with Crockett for the Crockett Cup and things like that. But you know, in our territory, right? You know, Lawler had his place, and you know, there's people in Seattle and California And you did not, you know, you didn't know it because the TV was regional. It wasn't national.
Right. Yep.
So I think that's a reason. But I found someone the other day that was talking to me, and they're like, "Oh my God, Mid-South Sports was my favorite wrestling." I'm, "Oh, okay, okay." I said, "By the way, my dad's Cowboy Bill Watts." And they go, and I don't know what this person was doing in their whole life. It's like, "Oh, did he wrestle?" I'm like, who's your favorite? Well, Junkyard Dog, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, you can't even wrap your head around and say Junkyard Dog's your favorite wrestler and did not see Cowboy Bill Watts wrestle. So I was trying to think, you know, because, you know, around 94, he took some time off, and then 96, he took some time off, you know, because he did the Stampedes Alive in 85. Uh-huh. That was going to be his farewell tour, and then he did the Stampede is something Alive in 87, and so he definitely didn't wrestle much in 86. And then came back for a short period watching. But yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, now you obviously a little bit on, you went to University of Louisville, you played football.
Yes.
And then you went on to train and go into the pro wrestling. In around 92, you were hired by WCW, right? You debuted with the winning streak, everything else. Did anybody ever give you a hard time about your dad being the booker there and everything else? Or did they, like you mentioned earlier, was everybody like, "Oh man, this kid grew up with this guy"? And
the guys that came through Mid-South, you know, you had Dr. Death was there. Terry Bam Bam Gordy was there. Rock and Roll Express was coming through there. Mm-hmm. Michael Hayes, you know, was coming through there. Sting, the Steiners.
Yeah. Bobby Eaton.
Mm-hmm. You had a lot of people that, like I said, knew me since I was, you know, from in diapers all the way up to when I got there. And though not one of those people ever said anything.
Yeah. Right.
There were people there that did not know me. And my dad had already been there for a while. And when he came in, he put the hammer down. I mean, WCW was losing so much money. It's not even funny. Ted Turner called my father and said, "Hey, I'm going to have to get rid of this if I can't even just break even."
Yeah.
And I don't know how many millions of dollars they were losing when my dad came in. Within 12 months, my dad had him breaking even, and then they were going to start making money. But he was already, no, nothing off the top rope, taking the mats away from the ring, reestablishing the referee as an actually authority figure in the ring. So there was a lot of guys that were used to there not being any leadership or running over whoever was there. And when my dad came in, there was no ramp up. There was no honeymoon stage.
Yeah.
You know, from what I understand, he just walked in and blew everything up. So there was a lot of guys, and especially your guys that were your higher paid guys that had pulled the wool over the lawyers' eyes and people's eyes at WCW about, you know, this lush, "Well, I only want this many dates, and this is how much I want, and this is how much I need." Because when he came in, he's like, I don't give a shit. As a matter of fact, I remember when he said, "All you guys that are on the upper echelon, understand you have no days off, or we can renegotiate your contract."
Yeah.
Because if you're the highest paid people, you're not going to be the highest paid to sit home. So, you know, now all of a sudden the bluff stopped because there was no athlete that was going to bluff my father. He'd been it, did it, knows it, lived it. And so that kind of pissed off a whole bunch of people that had some kind of cush jobs, for sure. Then you had some of the younger guys that they weren't sure. They wanted to be jealous of whatever went on. So there was a lot of heat per se. As soon as I got there, I thought it was hilarious when I first got there. Dustin is there, and he comes up and gives me the biggest hug in the world. Of course, I knew Dustin.
Yeah,
I had known Dustin, and I thought he was just hugging me because he loved me. Hey, we're such good friends. And he goes, Eric, oh my God, thank God you're here. Thank God you're here. I said, bro, I'm here, man. It's gonna be great. We're gonna ride the road. He goes, for those reasons, that's nice. He goes, now all the boys can hate you instead of me. And yeah. he was so serious. I can't tell you. And I didn't even at that time I didn't even get it, right? I mean, I didn't know WCW, and I didn't see and hear me out. Those kind of things might have happened in my dad's federation, but I don't remember them. You know, there's so much that is so different. In my dad's federation, there were the good guys and bad guys never sat together.
Right.
They didn't drive together. They would be fired if they did. They'd be fired if they're on the same plane. They'd be fired if they roomed in the hotels together. They'd be fired if they're hanging out at the bars together. You know, I mean, it was a total kayfabe scenario the whole way. So I think so much had changed. So there were so many guys, and I really didn't have the time to worry about it. And there were so many of the dirt sheets, Meltzer and all these people, you know, they sold so many papers and newsletters just burying the shit out of me. I saw Meltzer one time, and you know, there's so many of the guys that hated Meltzer. I mean, just hated him. The only guys that liked him were like Flair, you know, because he was always putting Flair over, and Flair, from what I heard, was giving him insider information sometimes. But Flair is such a great, you know, pro wrestler, you know, so the guys that were always getting put over by him, of course, liked him. But he had a way of just ripping and torching people to death. And so people thought, you know, I think people thought, or maybe even Meltzer thought, that I was going to have a complete attitude when I met him. And the only thing I said to him is I said, as often as you put me on the cover of your newsletter and rip me apart, I should be getting royalties. That's all I said to him. I said, how much money are you making off me ripping me, you know, trying to get at my dad? You know, he just looked at me and kind of smirked and walked off, you know. But again, I'm not taking it. I'm also a business person. I mean, if that's how he's paying and you know, raising his family and putting food on his table, and shoot, he still does reports now, you know, he's still important now in the ring. So I wasn't ever mad at him like that. I mean, you know, so many of the guys would say, how can he say anything since he's never been in the ring? That's a tough one for me because I've been an athlete my whole life. There's a million journalists and sports broadcasters and things like that that never even touched a baseball, basketball, football, but they damn sure could report on that sport, and they knew what a good athlete was and wasn't. So I didn't want to go that far, but there was a lot going on. But I had already seen so much in my life that it didn't faze me at all. I was more saddened by the younger talent that were getting chewed up by the heat, by the rumors, by the kayfabe sheets, that it actually affected them. Like, they would be just sick. They would hate it. You know, certain cars, there'd be a rule, don't read any kayfabe sheets, you know, because there might be people in the car that couldn't handle it. You know, what they're being said about them or something else. I never read them because I'm not a mark for sheets at all. Yeah. I would hear guys laughing all the time about, oh my God, Cowboy, or some of the guys like Junkyard Dog used to call my dad the Hat, you know, or Dogan, the Hat, you know. And then you'd hear these guys every once in a while reading the sheet and go, Jesus, Cowboy swerved him again, you know. they would talk about how they'd even throw the dirt sheet riders off on storylines and stuff like that. So those are the things I heard. I think one time someone said, oh my God, look at this. I think Meltzer had me on the cover as a weenie, like a hot dog, with my Louisville jacket on, and I laughed my butt off. I'm like, that is awesome. That's hilarious. You know, but I didn't take the time to read it. And I think the reason why I didn't is I think my father had said something in the tune of, don't support it the sheets don't support the sport.
Yeah.
And I think there were also, there were real problems with it, because sometimes, and I'm not talking about Meltzer per se, there were a lot of people that were smart marks and had newsletters or sheets and stuff. And they would, you know, some of these people would go out of the way to tell someone's, you know, it was a big deal to say, this is what this person's real name is, or this is where this person lives, or this is their phone number, or some crazy crap. First things first, you should never expose any artist's name, real name. If they wanted their real name, that's what they'd wrestle with. I didn't have a problem with it. I'm Eric Watts. I'm Eric Watts. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care. But come on, man. I mean, that's just crazy, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, in 95, you moved over to the WWE. What was the WWF then? And you were teamed with Chad Fortune. That's Techno Team 2000.
Yep.
What did you think of that gimmick at that time?
Absolutely had no idea. I know this sounds crazy, but WWE, the one thing I got to say, once I got up there, you really saw what production was. And I'm saying from the beginning to the end. You know, WCW guys were coming up with their own outfits for the most part, until Eric Bischoff came in and made Glacier and made, mm-hmm. you know, certain things. He also did Van Hammer, you know, mm-hmm. so Van Hammer came out with a guitar. Johnny B. Badd, they made look like a Little Richard. But minus that, no one really had a gimmick. You were kind of in trunks or shorts or whatever you wanted to do, wrestling the way you wanted to wrestle and doing what you did more as a person. At WWE, there was none of that. And so when I signed, I had no idea. I got to be honest with you. I didn't even think about it. Now that you just asked the question, that's kind of odd. I did not even think about whether I was going to keep my name. You know, would they want, you know, Cowboy Bill Watts' son, Eric Watts? But they had a marketing team. And the marketing team did research, and they came up with these names. Funny little tidbit. I graduated out of business school and all this other stuff, and so they're doing they did a marketing, and they found that people with the names alike or rhymed, people would remember more. So now think about WWE when we came to WWE, and think about everyone that came in with us, Bart and Billy Gunn, the Smoking Guns, Troy and Travis Techno Team 2000, Sonny and Skip, Skip and Zip and Sonny. It was so like that is absolutely taking some research and taking it too far. And it was kind of hilarious, because on us, Vince had decided that he was going to hire this fashion designer, major runway fashion designer out of New York, and they were going to do our outfits. And we went up there, and I'm telling you, like you would see in some kind of major movie. I mean, we're standing on a pedestal. We've got people putting different clothes on us, tapering it, chalking it, pinning it. You know, I like it. No, I don't like that. You know, drop it down, do. Bro, I did not. They had sketches of the different looks and the different clothes we were going to wear and all of this stuff. Just amazing. It was just amazing. And they flew us in there, I don't know how many times. So you think about it, they fly us from Atlanta first class, boom, into New York, limo from there to the thing. We would sit there maybe 6 hours, limo us back, fly us back home. And they did that 3 or 4 times. Literally, the first time we tried on our outfits was the first time we were on TV. Chad's boots were made backwards. And they were zip up.
Yeah.
So when I say backwards, the person that made them put the calf portion up front, so he couldn't zip it. We had to electric tape the boots. His pants almost didn't fit in his boots, and we're both 6'6". So how they made mine the right length and his not, I don't know. paint your faces some. We don't know anything about painting faces. It was the dumbest thing I've ever done. And then right before we go out, they go, oh, your names are Troy and Travis. And we go, oh, which one do you want to be? And I go, I don't care. And Chad's like, I don't care. And he goes, well, flip a coin. And they flipped a coin, and somehow I was Troy and he was Travis out of a flip of a coin. And so, here's the real down low on it. I didn't care what they call me, don't call me. All I cared about the whole time I was in wrestling was I wanted to make a name for myself, and I wanted to work so hard that I was known as the greatest wrestler of all time. Just like I went to college, I wanted to win the Heisman Trophy. I wanted to win a national championship. I wanted to be the first player picked in the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't win the Heisman Trophy. We did not win the national championship, but we crushed Alabama in the Fiesta Bowl. And we played in the Tokyo Dome versus Syracuse as well. And I didn't go the first round. I was going to go in the sixth round to Tampa or Cincinnati. And it looked mainly like Tampa, as a quarterback. But I've always learned that you set your goals as high as possible. And because if you fall short, you're still on a higher trajectory than the people that are just trying to make it in life or barely setting a goal. So if you think about it, I wasn't allowed in the ring to wrestle or work out in the ring. That was my mom made my dad promise that that would not happen prior to having a college degree. So we set up rings, we ran lights, we transferred, we did everything. We sat in meetings. We did transportation for wrestlers. We did the music, the lights on TV. We did it all. We did it all, but we never, never got in the ring. So I didn't know how guys called matches, didn't call matches, never learned the psychology. None of that. That, you know, I wouldn't know. I didn't know the difference between a finish, a double finish, a false finish. I never used that lingo ever in my life. And so if you think about it, by the time I decided I would wrestle, now I'm 23 years old. And I feel like I'm behind the eight ball because some of these guys started at 16, 17, 18 years old. Right. And I was trying to compete with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Sting. And I wasn't trying to be better than Mark Bagwell or Van Hammer or I'm not throwing anything their way. I'm not throwing anything their way at all. I'm saying that was not the trajectory. I want to be better than Hulk Hogan. I want to be better than Macho Man. I want to be better than Bret Hart. That's what I was training to do. That's what was my goal was. So I don't care what name someone's going to name me. I don't care about someone having jealousy or being upset in the locker room. I didn't have time for that. It was a business. It was not personal. It's not emotional. It is business. And that's how I treated it. Now, I did question Vince, not to his face, but through the lines, I said, here's my only question, guys. Now, some people tell me now that I don't sound too country, that I'm really not that country. You know, I was out of Oklahoma. Then I was 4 years in Louisville. I mean, I talk pretty much redneck. And to the point where I would, you know, when I got my first house here, I set up the answering machine and I listened to it because it'd say, oh, listen to your message. Do you want to change it? And I go, oh, my God, that's what I sound like. I felt so bad. I was like, whoa. Now, some people say you don't, you know, like I'll say certain things. They'll go, yeah, I can see it a little bit, but you don't sound that way anymore. Well, yeah. I was just mind boggled because it was, you know, Vince said, you guys are 6'6". Eric, you're doing reverse flips off the top rope and jumping to the top, no hands. You guys are doing double leapfrogs, double crossbodies, they're like, you are the next generation of tags. Cause tags, you know, generally were your small guys. That's why the Road Warriors did so good. Is because they were these two, you know, beasts, right? And so they said, you're the next generation, you guys. You know, you Eric, you can do all the luchador, you know, flip-flop, flippity-dibbity and all that stuff, and you're both 6'6", and both athletes. And so you're the next you are the tag team of the 21st century is basically what Vince said. And I said, great. But in my mindset, I was wondering how the marketing team thought they would make us techno Team 2000 and me have a country accent. Because I'd make fun. I'm like, what am I supposed to say? Hey, this is Troy Techno, y'all. Techno Team 2000. We're going to take you into the future. Bang. Yeah. And so I had actually come up with an idea, but it was too late because they were done with Chad Fortune and I did not know it. But I had come up with, I went and invested in some SEALs, Navy SEAL mics for your throat.
Yeah.
And I tested it out. And so my idea is that we would add that to our outfits because our outfits went around our throat. And when we would do interviews and stuff like that, that they would put the synthesizer on it.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of synthesize our voice. And I thought that would have been really killer to do a synthesized voice. Not too crazy. And that to me would have brought in like more of a techno team. And then I even made some jewelry with the TT2000 that looked cool. So I'd come up with a lot of things to give Vince. But about that time, they just believed that Chad was not where he needed to be in the ring. And in the ring, he had more to learn for sure, like we all do. But he really needed to learn more. But it was mainly, I believe, his locker room etiquette. He just didn't understand the politics. He just didn't understand not just the politics. He did not understand the lay of the land, right? You know, when you come in your first 3 years, you are to go up to every person. Hi, I'm Eric Watts. You know, hi, I'm Eric Watts. You're supposed to introduce yourself. I don't care if me and Undertaker are out the night before. Mm-hmm. The next morning when I come in, I hey Taker, Eric Watson, shake his hand. Every person loved him. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. And I would ask him, well, dude, you're gonna bury us. Why, bro? Who am I? Why? I'm like, you're so stupid, man. You're not. What do you mean? Who are you? This is how pro wrestling works. Dude, quit being such a dipshit.
Yeah.
And he was very quiet. And let me tell you what the problem is with very quiet and insecure. Very quiet and insecure in the wrong environment translates to cocky and arrogant.
Right. Yeah.
They don't know you're quiet and insecure. They think you're too good for the place. And that did not help us.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you had your run in WCW. They had the run in WWE. You went back to WCW for a bit, did a little time in ECW. Do you feel like through everything, I always felt like Eric Watts wasn't given the opportunity, right? The chance to break through. Do you feel that being a second generation wrestler, do you feel that it hurt you more or helped you more when you look back at the context of your career now?
Yeah, gee whiz. What a great question. I don't even know if I can answer that. Dave, I am not big on do-overs. Like, I'm not that dude that's on the porch and goes, has a drink and goes, man, you know, if I could be 16 once again.
Yeah.
I don't want to be 16. Not even for a second. I don't want to be 18. I'm good where I'm at.
Yeah.
And so I don't look back. Because A, it does you no good. It's right. Not gonna change it. It's not gonna change it. But man, it's so tough to say, you know, was I ever used right and things, because I was very excited when Eric Bischoff took over. I think we were in Macon and there's a TV and he wanted 100% of the people, all the athletes he wanted in for that show.
Yeah.
And in that show, he comes and he lays down the law. I'm the man. I'm this. I'm that. Blah, 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 blah. He even took several good jabs at my father. there. And but then he said, and we're going to do this thing right, and I'm going to promote the people that work the hardest, and da da da. And then he said, prime example of what we want and what I want at WCW is Eric Watts. There is no one that works harder on the road and off the road than Eric Watts. He is at the gym. I mean, he's at the power plant every day that he has off, and he wrestles every day of every event. He is booked on 100% of the events every year. And he still comes home and makes it every day that he's off to the power plant. So I was like, whoa, I knew Bischoff hated my father, but I couldn't believe he said that. And I remember DDP coming up to me and goes, bro, where did that come from? And Dallas and Eric were good friends. And I go, bro, I don't know. Because I was, you know, the way he was talking and how bad he hated my father, I thought he was going to say, and Eric Watts, you're fired. So right there, man, I thought, well, okay, you know, my dad's out of the way. I'm not going to have the, you know, his dad's the boss, blah, 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 blah. And I was excited. I was like, okay, now I can, here we go. Yep. And he basically took me off all the shows and sat me at home. And so then when I said, nope, I'm good with this one, and I took off, especially when I went to WWE, Vince lost his stuff about me and Chad's tryout. I mean, as soon as we came through the apron, he's like, you sign now. I want you. Da, da, da. He was going berserk. He just had to have us, had to want us. And so I was right back in it going, okay, fresh start. Thank God. And shit, within, I don't know, within 2 or 3 months, Chad had pissed off every guy in the thing to the point where guys are coming up going, Eric, is there anything you can do? And I'm looking at him going, guys, literally, that's all I do is talk to him from the time we leave till the time we get here. And he's just too dense. And I've known this kid since college football. He's just too thick in the head. I don't, hell, he's living in my house, you know. You know, he came down to WCW because, you know, he's done playing pro football and, you know, gambled what little money he had away. And he was checking people in at a Gold's Gym or a Powerhouse Gym up there living with his mom again. And his mom actually called me and said he's not in good shape. He's, you know, he's depressed, blah, blah, blah. So I got him a job at the power plant wrestling. And he was there for 2 or 3 years. Well, he lived for free at my place. So you'd think after all that time that your buddy could give you a little information, you know, and he just wouldn't take it. So that kind of hogtied us. And then Vince got rid of him and wanted me to stay. And he said, hey, I got a new package, blah, 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 and asked me to stay. Please stay, please stay. And I had actually made a deal with Vince when I first talked to him. I said, hey, Vince, if I ever found myself in a situation where I'm unhappy, meaning I'm not being, you know, like I'm sitting home or, you know, not working or whatever, can I ask for my release? He said, yes. I told several people that and they laughed at me. They go, it doesn't matter what Vince says. He's not going to, once he gets you in that contract, he's not going to release you. Well, swear to God, that's what happened. Vince basically said, hey, it's going to take us about 5-6 months to revamp you, new character, new this. So you're going to sit on the shelf for, you know, 9 months or, you know, so maybe a year. But I'm going to give you a guarantee and I'm going to pay you. You know, and you're going to be doing fine. And he was doing that. And I made the call and I said, hey, remember when we said this? And he said, yep, I said it. He goes, I'm going to send you a new agreement and I'm going to send you your release. You sign whichever one you want and we'll go from there. And of course I screwed up and read the agreement because damn it, it was a good one. And but going back to what I told you before is I can't sit. How am I going to be better than Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or Hulk Hogan or Sting or how am I ever going to be in the elite status when I'm so young into my career and I'm taking chunks of time, like 9 months to a year off?
Right.
So I just didn't see that. Now, did I shoot myself in the foot? What would the character been? Blah, blah. Man, no, I just did my thing, went back to WCW. So, and the WCW thing was just hilarious. Bischoff loved every ounce of me. Like, he loved my matches. He's watching me. He's going off. And I swear to God, or that's what he was saying. So I had decided that I was going to start wearing flared out jeans and tight shirts and sunglasses, hair in a two-tier ponytail.
Yeah.
So I'm going through people on Saturday night. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And then Dallas goes, are you hearing this guy's, the crowd's reaction when he comes out? Da, da, da. And you've seen the matches. And Bischoff's like, hell yeah. And he goes, Dallas, I got to be honest with you. Only thing I don't like is I can't stand that outfit. But dude, by that time I was over it. I was over people telling me what to do, not to do. Cause I did everything everyone asked. And Dallas said, he wants you to change your outfit. I said, nope, not doing it. And the funny thing about it is I ran my own show in Tulsa and sold it out at the Tulsa Fairgrounds. And Vince lent me some talent. And I used some talent from WCW. Unheard of. People like, why would you're WCW? Why would Vince? I said, Vince and I aren't on bad terms. You know, he appreciates my father. He knows my father. I know him. I asked. That's the difference between you people. He lent me some people. Well, when he did, he lent me some people. And Prince Albert was there. Great guy. Mm-hmm. Sherry was there. He gave me, because I was wanting to put together Bad Street. So I can't remember who was up there. He sent me Michael Hayes and then Terry Gordy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we had the people. And Prince comes up to me and goes, hey, brother, you know, how you doing? I said, great. Well, Vincent said, hey, Eric, do you mind? I'm going to send a young tag team out there because I'm wanting to get them extra shows. They're really good. I don't care if they win, lose. Do you mind if I send those guys out too? I said, Vince, you're doing me such a solid. Please, please send them out. So he sends them out. So Prince is there and me and him knowing each other. Just what a great guy. And so he said, guys, they're walking by. Come here. I want you to meet Eric Watts. Hey, Mr. Watts, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. We shake hands and all this other stuff. And they go, and I've never heard of these kids. And they go, you know, Mr. Watts, we're doing pretty good at WWE. But man, we really like your look. I said, well, I appreciate it. I said, too bad WCW doesn't like my look. And Prince goes, ask the man, ask him. And they go, Mr. Watts, is there any way that you wouldn't mind if we went to Vince and we put on outfits like you, the flared out jeans and the shirts, the tight shirts and stuff? I snickered to myself. I'm laughing. I go, kids, absolutely. They were named the Hardy Boys.
Yep. Yep.
Matt and Jeff.
Yeah.
And so I'm still at WCW. And so I hear about the outfit again. And I told Dallas, I said, hey, Dee Dee, hottest tag going right now. Hardy Boys. He goes, yeah, those kids are good. I go, you know where they got their outfit? He goes, no. I go, I had them on my show in Tulsa. I said, tell Bischoff his idea of outfits suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that went over like a fart in church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was cool, you know, because, you know, like, listen, I've been in Japan. I've been to Germany. I've got all kinds of opportunities. And so then TNA came along, man, and it just exploded. It just exploded.
Yeah. You had a good run with TNA, probably one that you're probably most remembered for even. And I always remember you with that stable with David Flair, Brian Christopher, the next generation thing. How much fun was it working with those guys? Because Brian Christopher, man, was just such a character.
It was absolutely horrible. I literally wanted to choke out both of them.
Did they ever be quiet?
All around me? Yeah. 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 Around me, yeah. The one thing I laugh to this day about Brian Christopher, I have seen that guy act so crazy in the locker room. He has a horrible, like, behind the scene, like, independent companies that bring him in and pick him up from the airport. Just, I haven't heard a good thing. But, yeah, you know, he either gets too crazy and just souped up on whatever and treats people like just crap. I mean, there's a guy in New York that brought me in one time. And he said, my wife was just in tears. He eviscerated her in the car. You stupid, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is the promoter's wife. Right.
Yeah.
And so I saw him a few times in the locker room. But when I got to TNA, see, I kind of laughed about it because I was like, I was looking around like, why do the guys, do people really think that this kid's tough or something? Or are they just putting up with him? And yeah, so I kind of let him know. I think he already knew it. I pulled him aside and spoke a little love to him, basically just saying, hey, I don't know why you act that way. I really don't. And I don't know where you're going and with it and why you're being this way. And it gets a lot of attention. I said, and I see you go off on some of the top talent even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was my way of telling him he wasn't top talent.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, you do need to understand the difference between acting that way to people that either don't care or will blow it off, or maybe they're scared of you, and doing it to someone like me that I will put you in a little matchbox and flush you down the toilet.
Yeah.
So we haven't ever had a problem. Maybe if he hears this interview, you might have a problem, but I doubt it. But he was just that attitude. He just had this like just horrible attitude. David was, and I liked David. He was scared of his own shadow. He just, you know, David never really fit because David, much like a few other second generation wrestlers, were trying to be Ric Flair. And there's only one Ric Flair.
Right.
Like the only one that got it in Flair's family was Charlotte Flair. And Charlotte Flair didn't come out to be Ric Flair. She came out to be Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
And I say the same thing about Dustin Rhodes. And until he went to WWE and they made him Gold Dust, did it hit him that he's not trying to be Dusty Rhodes.
Right.
Yeah. And once he wasn't trying to fill the shoes of Dusty Rhodes, the kid became his own incredible pro wrestler. I think Dustin's one of the greatest wrestlers there is. And he's still wrestling.
Yep.
Oh, he's phenomenal. The kid's a freak. The kid's a freak. He's unbelievable. He can call it. He loves men. He eats. He eats and breathes wrestling. But now going back to Christopher, the crazy thing about Christopher, that was the way he acted in the locker room and around other people. But brother man, you get in the ring, so fun, so exciting. He loves pro wrestling. He eats and breathes. So it was just a really weird thing. So maybe I came into a situation where he had been acting that way a long time, you know, at TNA or whatever, you know, or that. And so that's the way it was. And you know, maybe he didn't want to be tagged with Flair. Maybe he didn't want to be tagged with me. I don't know. So the a lot of people remember that. Right. A lot of people remember that. And I, none of us showed anything out there, and nothing was really said in the back. I'd already did that with Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes at WCW. And I really think that was the first time that people were really doing that second generation as a group of people when WCW did that, when I first broke into WCW. And so I kind of felt like, man, we're going to replay that one at TNA. And I didn't know how far it was going to go with Christopher and all these guys, because I think Brian truly wanted to be in a singles match.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but hear me out. It didn't take away from our performance, our interviews, and how we acted in the ring. But But if you're asking me, was it fun? It could have been fun if there wasn't, I don't know. I just didn't have, put it this way. I didn't have a off camera chemistry with him. David can get along with anyone. He's kind of like Chad Fortune. He's really quiet and to himself, and there's not really much to him, meaning charisma. So it's not like a guy what am I going to do? Talk college football with him, basketball, you know, what am I going to talk to him about? We have nothing in common other than second generation, which I appreciate him. I care about him. He's a good kid. You know, he really is a good kid, but the chemistry, right? It just wasn't there. But man, you know, TNA, but look, there was a lot of rough relationships up at TNA, and that's kind of what made it. I mean, TNA was just a different type of ECW. It was sure. Total chaos. It was total chaos. You know, they'd be writing storylines up till when the matches start.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Well,
I also think that's what it made so good. It made it frustrating for a lot of the boys in the back because they wanted to know what they're doing and who are they wrestling, and you know. Give me some input, and they would just be flipping and flopping and changing, and that. But I was used to it. I saw it. And I really didn't care. Just tell me what to do. I'll go out and do it. And let's roll with it. But man, right. when Vince took the handcuffs off me and put that mic on me, it was over. It was over.
Yeah. Well, and after TNA, right? You wrestled a couple more years here and there, and whatever else, and hung it up. After retired, do you like, you know, currently? Do you ever do appearances, like conventions and things? Do you enjoy getting out there and doing those things?
Yeah, no, I do them. You know, first things first is wrestling-wise, the reason why I walked away from it is because once I ruptured my esophagus at WWE, the doctors could never figure out why I was coughing blood all the time. Mm-hmm. And the coughing blood thing, which I still do today, occasionally, and the choking from the botched surgery, which I do almost every time I eat, has not been fixed. And, you know, and then the doctor said that I'd die by the time I was 35 from all the stuff in my esophagus and coughing blood, and they couldn't figure it out. They can't cauterize it. They can't fix it. I've had scopes up my ears, nose, mouth, everywhere else. One time they had me at Emory and they brought me in a disinfected room and disinfected a steel chair and had me lean against the wall, and they had Dallas Page hit me with a chair on my back with an IV already in my arm until I coughed blood on the wall. And then they pushed me right onto the surgery table, knocked me out. And by the time they got the scopes and everything, they followed the blood and couldn't find the source of it. So they said, you know, it's just going to keep on bleeding. It's going to be cancerous and you're going to die. So that wasn't even the problem. The problem was one time I could take a power bomb from Sid Vicious and nothing happened. And then all of a sudden in a match, I could take a arm drag, something very low impact, hit my back and have blood all in my mouth. That's not even the problem. You know, because if I was choking too bad, sometimes I'd just roll out and grab someone's drink and try to clear my throat, which is disgusting. Cool. But hey, when you're suffocating to death, you'll do some crazy crap.
Yeah.
The problem was when we do certain bumps and need to stay laying, or they were getting the heat on me and the blood would come up in my throat, and now I'm laying on my back and I can't clear the blood. So I'd start choking in the ring. And it's very difficult when you're about to black out to, you know, it was just like juggling. And that's why I did the TNA thing, because when I signed that contract, TNA ran no independence. So when I did that contract, my contract was 52 days a year, every Wednesday. So, you know, so. Okay, if I have some blood, this, you know, it's not like I'm bleeding, I got to wrestle the next day, you know, so it wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
But when TNA, and TNA, I end up leaving, or I would have wrestled more years. And the thing that sucked is I was going through a brutal divorce, a huge divorce. And it just got to the point where the lawyers were like, hey, it would be best if you weren't wrestling due to the fact of all the things that are being brought up in the divorce and alimony and child support. And it just like they said, it's not behooving you right now. You don't need the money, but you also don't want to be in a situation where you're making extra money and then get hit with alimony child support on that. And then if you don't want to wrestle the year after, now we got to go back in court to adjust things. So I asked for my release, and it crushed me because I believe had I not been going through that divorce and TNA would have stayed on a trajectory of, you know, mainly the one day a week, man, I was in a sweet spot because now DDP enters the picture and Raven's there. And so Raven does a huge angle with me, which was bringing in DDP, which was going to bring in me and DDP versus Raven and whoever, which was going to then, they were going to turn me heel against DDP, and DDP and I were going to do matches. And I think that we would have just absolutely crushed it. Some guy had gotten the AWA name for a while. And and I remember they flew me into Phoenix. They flew Dallas. They flew Mick Foley in. He was at WWE at the time. And they were going to do the huge show sold out, it was, you know, outside. It was an incredible show. And they put me main event against Dallas Page for the world championship. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this guy had like 10 or 15 dates lined up right after that. And Mick Foley was actually the guest referee. So we go, and I'm thinking, okay, no problem. Shoot, I'll wrestle Dallas and, you know, do the job and go on. And I remember I was there, and they go, no, that's not the idea. The idea is you're going to be Dallas tonight, and you are going to be our AWA champion. I was like, what? And I said, okay, not because I didn't think I could be the champion. I knew I could be the champion. I just knew Dallas was all, you know, on a hell of a run himself. And, you know, there we go. And so we do it. And I'm like, well, this is pretty cool. And we had a phenomenal match. And I remember Mick and I drove to the airport. And he was just telling me how proud he is of me from my days at WCW, WWE, because me and him had a lot of matches, went the road. Mick is one of the kindest human beings in the world, but just he just gave me so much. He just pumped me up so much, and I was on top of the world. And then, you know, a few weeks later, the guy lost his funding because I think what he did, he sank so much in the show thinking he was going to get a TV deal or something like so many people do. And TV, you've got to, you know, if you're going to go say I TV, you better have a whole bunch of house shows going on now, or you better have 5 weeks of TV in the can that they can start doing while you produce other stuff. So that was gone. But, you know, there are some things I look back at and I wonder, wow, man, you know, like me and Dallas would have ripped it apart. Me and Raven were going to rip it apart, TNA, then, you know, a few other spots, but it also might have all worked out perfect because I don't know that if I would have blown back up, could I have handled being on WWE on the road that many days a year with my issue with my internal bleeding.
Right. Yeah.
So that's, I had a paint company. I had a turnkey company. You know, I had several things back in Atlanta, so I didn't need to wrestle, and I was raised very young to live on one third of what you one third of what you're making, period, and stow everything else away every day, and then figure out where you sit at 65. And so, thank God for my parents, and thank God for understanding business and accounting and all those things. So, since day one, I've always saved my money and I've never lived above my means.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great book. It'll make you fall asleep. The first three chapters you'll fall asleep, but it's called The Millionaire Next Door. And it's a phenomenal book, but basically that's what it says. Okay. So basically what the guy says, you make $100,000. You live like you're making $33,000. So you're making $33,000, well, you're not driving a new car. You're not buying a new house. You know, so basically that's the whole concept. You live as though you're making one third. Not spending one third of what you're making, because now that's not what it's saying. So you make $200,000, you live like you're making $60,000.
Yeah.
Well, most people that make $200,000 a year live like they're making $500,000.
Yeah, right.
So if you do it the opposite way, believe it or not, there's no one in the world that cannot save money and have a very nice amount of money if they do it, start doing it early. Having $1 million into retirement, if you truly start doing it from the day you enter the workforce and you stay working the whole time and you get with a company that has a 401k and you fully fund the 401k while they're matching the 401k, and at the same time, you live on one third, not spend, live as though you're making one third of what you're making, well, you may be damn near homeless for quite some time. But your bank account's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. What people don't understand, once the money gets to a certain amount, it starts doubling and tripling because of interest and things like that. And so it's not sexy when you're doing it in your teens and your 20s and your 30s, when you're watching all your other friends lease cars and do this and do that. But when you get in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, it sure is kind of sweet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So how do you have a way that fans can follow you to keep up on what you're doing and any appearances you might do? Or do you?
I am such a jerk, Dave, that I have procrastinated to death. I've got an Instagram. Don't know the handle. Got a Twitter X. Don't know the handle. I've got a Facebook. Not sure what the handle is. And my Facebook has been maxed out at 5,000 people since the first day. I got someone that goes in my Facebook like every 3 months and deletes 200 people. They actually look through the profiles to see if the people post or don't post, or they look at my messenger to see how many people talk to me, and they just get rid of, 200 that aren't really active accounts, so that, because I'll get people from high school or college saying, hey, I can't even be added. I'm right now talking with some people about this, the difference between a professional page and a fan page on Facebook, so I could open up to get to the public more often, because I do want to get to the public more often. But believe you me, man, you caught me through Messenger. I cannot stand Messenger. Most of the time I don't even read all my messages because I get so many requests. But what I do is I try to funnel through what I can funnel through. And people like yourself that have a podcast or what have you, I try to dedicate myself to doing X number of podcasts per month. As my mother and father raised me, pro wrestling is in our DNA. It's been our whole life blood. And I tell podcasters all the time, and radio people and TV people all the time, that you are part of the environment of pro wrestling. And if we want pro wrestling to last forever and have other generations enjoy it, we need all of that hitting on the cylinders. So it doesn't matter whether a podcaster has 10 million people or 10,000 people or 1,000 people listening to them. You get out the word enough and people hear the podcast or like something about it and it interests them in wrestling, or they want to go back and look at some history of wrestling, or they want to turn on WWE to see where it's at, or AEW today to where it's at, or they want to research something. That is how you keep things alive. I try to here's the two examples I try to use. When I was a kid, I looked forward to every year that the Harlem Globetrotters would come to town.
Right.
I just loved it. Yeah. I just loved it. When is the last time you've even seen an advertisement for the Harlem Globetrotters?
I don't know.
There you go. I mean, I was with Hollywood about 6 months ago. He worked out with my daughter that's at Naval Academy, a basketball player, stuff like that. And he said, yeah, Eric, it's crazy. They still tour, but nothing like they used to. I said, no, they don't. Barnum and Bailey's Circus. You know, as a kid, you'd want to go. You want to see the clowns. You want to see the tightrope. Now, don't get me wrong. I love going and watching Cirque du Soleil, right?
Yep.
Those tickets are expensive, so not everyone could go. The circus, everyone could go, right? I mean, bring your Coke bottle for $1 off a ticket. And when's the last time you have heard or seen of the Barnum and Bailey Circus come to town? They haven't. So
I think they're out of business.
I don't even
think they promote anymore.
Yep. And you just proved Bill Watts and Anna Watts's Pro Wrestling 101. You people keep the people interested by all wavelengths, TV, podcast, radio, newsletters, email. It doesn't matter. So it's people like you that promote pro wrestling. And whether I haven't watched a wrestling match on TV in 10 years, 9 years. Most of the time when I'm with DDP, I'll meet some people. I'll go, I guess they wrestle. Yeah, those are the episodes. Yeah. I was somewhere at his wedding about 2 or 3 years ago. And so Rob Van Dam, me and him are talking, me and Mark Merrow talking. Of course, we're all hanging out talking. Well, a few kids come in. I'm like, well, I guess they're wrestlers. And so I asked one of DDP's guys, I said, so are any of those guys like famous or doing good? He goes, yeah, Eric, they're doing pretty good. I go, okay, well, I mean, like, what are some of their names? Well, those are the Uzos. I go, that's their name. No, but I did. I said, that's their name? Like Uzos? Like they're oozing something? They're like, Eric, look it up. I'm like, oh, dang, these guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Watching it, you know, so mainly when I'm with DDP, because he's doing all the fitness all the time. There's all kinds of athletes and celebrities always coming through his performance center. I'll see it that way. But going back to what you said, it just proves it.
Mm-hmm.
Out of sight, out of mind. It's people like you that love the sport or entertainment, however you look at it. It's a give back. You know, I feel like I'm giving back to what paid for every one of my meals as a child and paid for every one of my kids' meals as they were children. And it's in the Watts DNA. So I do believe it is very important for me to get on and answer questions and do things. And yes, I get offers all the time for public appearances and things. I have slowed them down somewhat due to the fact that I do have a lot of my own business stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I own my own merchant processing company and a few other things, you know, for credit cards. So people that have businesses that have take credit cards. I've got a big company that we work with businesses on that or starting businesses. But I don't even promote that. I don't even cross promote that on anything like on my Facebook or anything. I keep it all separate. But I'm thinking about pushing it more. So.
Yeah.
That's what I do, and that's where I'm at. And you know, people can hit me up on Facebook. I'll tell you, it's the people that do something different that get on my Facebook. Like, you know, they'll send me a message or something saying, I sure would like to talk to you or blah, 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 blah. And somehow it'll pop up, and then I got to accept them to send something back. Those people are more likely than, you know, I literally my girlfriend or something like that got on my Facebook just like 3 weeks ago, and she goes, Eric, I looked a week back. In a week, you've got like 800 or 900 friend requests. I said, yeah, but I'll scroll once a month through them to see if I see someone from high school or college. But I don't know who to add, not add, because the other thing too, there's so many bots and fake accounts and all that crap. I don't want to get in that either.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, everybody, keep your eyes peeled. Hopefully, in the future, there'll be an Eric Watts, a public persona page for everybody to like and follow along.
Yeah, I'm really hoping, man. I don't know if it's going to happen in the next month. I started to do it, and I didn't understand it necessarily. And all of a sudden, I started getting a whole bunch of people. I sent out a few requests, and a few people were like, is this a fake page? Are you doing two pages? And I stopped doing it. But I'm talking to a few people right now that know what they're doing instead of me doing it. And we're pretty close to maybe making a deal to where I have someone else come on board for a month, 2 months, 3 months, and help me move, not move, but help me help me add a page so that I can talk, or at least my reels or my comments go out to more people. So look for that. If you do see another Eric Watts, hopefully it won't be an imposter. But the athletes page or the professional page, one of those two pages, I am going to expand to, and hopefully within the next few months.
Well, that sounds good. Well, and before I let you go, I got to know how's the old cowboy doing these days?
Cowboy's in he's in a town outside of Branson, Missouri, living down from the owner of Cabela's, Dick's Sporting Goods, right on the edge of a beautiful, beautiful lake, man, just gorgeous lake. He's got a beautiful place, and it's really cool, man. Morning, night, you'll see deer come across. You'll do the whole thing. It's got the old ferry boats and steamboats, and it's just so beautiful, man. And up top, the Cabela guy's got an 18-hole golf course, and he's got a thing called the Top of the Rock restaurant that is just incredible. And you look down the mountain and over the lake. So him and his wife, they've been living there. They moved from Destin, Florida, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago. And he's pretty beat up, man. He's 84. He had a back surgery maybe like 10 years ago, and everything was going good, but then everything started falling apart. And it's just that age, man. That man spent thousands. I'd be amazed. I'd like to find out how many thousands of matches that man had. I mean, he ran that road for a long, long, long. Well, like I said, you know, 85, he had his farewell tour and then came back and did a short one, 87. Yeah. I don't even remember. I think he broke in at like 65 or whatever. I mean, 20 something years and probably 300 plus days a year. You know, it's 6,000 matches, 7,000 matches. Yeah. So
that's a lot.
It takes a toll, man. You know, it takes a toll, it's real. And heck, there's a lot of people 84. And the saddest thing is so many of these friends have passed away.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that makes it that kind of makes it a little bit tough when
a lot of his peers are gone. Yep.
A lot of these, and like I said, you know, because he had so many people from the University of Oklahoma too. They played football, mm-hmm. and the wrestlers, the coaches. So, you know, when you're hanging out and you make it, you know, into those latter years and you start looking at your phone and your list of favorites go from 40 to 1 or so. Yeah. All you got to do is call your wife and kids. That's about it. It gets kind of lonely there.
Yeah. So, hell, I mean, there's a lot of the next generation after him that he booked and used and helped train and everything else that are gone too. It's not just his generation. Dr. Death and a lot of those guys that he was close to are gone and stuff. So,
yeah, man. And you're so right. And I've seen him, you know, when it got torn up. I mean, when Doc died, that got him. But he kind of, Doc lasted, right? You know, once he had throat cancer, he lasted for quite some time. So you could kind of process it. But like one of the main ones when Ernie Ladd died. Oh my goodness.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. And then he's, you know, Bruce and his buddy went to Oklahoma and became a doctor and was his personal doctor forever, you know, just passed away maybe 3 years ago. So yeah, a lot of that. But he, you know, I get people asking me all the time. He doesn't sign autographs anymore. He doesn't do any. The last time I heard he did a podcast maybe 4 years ago, and that was for Bradshaw and
Briscoe. Yeah.
And Briscoe. But Briscoe and Briscoe and Dad went to school together.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. You know, and that was a great podcast. I don't listen to many podcasts, but someone sent me that one. That was a great podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They have a good show. Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't leave his house anymore. You know, he basically has to have like a walker to get around, and one of his lungs quit functioning probably about 4 or 5 years ago, so sometimes he needs a little oxygen and things like that. But again, he's 84 or 85.
Absolutely, you know? Well, if next time you talk to him, tell him we said hey. If he ever gets that itch to do another one, tell him you know a guy that would love to talk to him.
So. I will put you on a list.
There you go.
I had a guy that I did one is phenomenal from Australia, and then another guy from Great Britain and a few other guys. But these two guys I've done like two or three podcasts for over the last 4 years. And yeah. and two of the guys I haven't talked to maybe in 8 months. And I get the message. I'm thinking, okay, maybe they want to do another podcast. Let me see if I got the time. And they both hit me up on the same day. Eric, we've had such a great time with you. What's the chances of getting your father on? I'm like, oh, you guys. Yeah, well, hey, you got it. Well, and it's horrible for me because what people don't understand is I'm a fan first. So to me, I want to hear the legends of wrestling. I want to hear the people that I look up to. I want to hear the people that are the icons of their sport. I want to, you know, one of my favorite things is when I go visiting, my dad gets a call from one of his old friends. They start telling so many stories. Like
I bet.
It was so fun to sit around him and Dusty.
Oh, I bet. Oh, I can only imagine.
Oh, you know, or Ganya's or Graham's or they would start going off on old stories. And you'd be like a kid in a candy shop. I was looking to buy popcorn. Where's the popcorn at?
Right. Yeah.
When I first got here to WCW, like one of the first weekends I was here, my dad's like, "Hey, you got a day off. Let's go to Dream's house and hang out, watch a little football." Oh. Dude, we got there. I could not. I was the bartender. I'd say, "Dream, you want another beer? Keep them coming, kid. Dad, you want another beer? Keep them coming." I was just opening Coors Lights and Coors Lights and Coors Lights and listening to football and stories, man. It was like unbelievable.
That's a good day. Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thank you for your time and for talking to us, man. You've been a pleasure to have on. And maybe we'll have you back on down the road and chat some more and dive a little deeper and maybe tell a few more cowboy stories. But I appreciate your time and talking to me.
I'm all about it. I'm all about it. Have a blessed day and a great
weekend. You too. Thank you, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wrestling Fans International Association is back. That's right, the premier fan club association of the 1970s and 1980s has been revived and is back in business. Join today. It's free at thewfia.org. That's thewfia.org. You can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/WFIA1969.
All right, and welcome back to the show. Once again, thank you to Eric Watts for coming on and talking to me. It was such a blast. Hopefully we'll have him on again in the future. I'd love, just love to hear some more Cowboy Bill Watts stories. I just can't get enough of hearing about the cowboy. We have a great show coming up for you next week. Our guest will be Justin Race, the son of Harley Race. Of course, if you watched the recent Dark Side of the Ring on Harley Race, you know Justin was all over that show, giving a lot of great insight into his father. We have a great chat with him coming up next episode. Now, once again, please go join the WFIA. It is free. You receive a bi-monthly newsletter. Visit the WFIA.org. Make sure you go check out and sign up for the Ultimate Classic Wrestling channel. Go to classicwrestling.net. Make sure you follow me on social media. Make sure you subscribe to my YouTube. Make sure you know, do all that stuff. Make sure you share, support, everything else. I share lots of cool newspaper articles and clippings, historical information. Lots of things out there on social media that you're going to want to see. So make sure you follow us and make sure you help us continue to grow and network by sharing my posts, the episodes, everything else. You guys are great. You're highly supportive, highly interactive. I love it. Let's just keep that energy going. But until next week's episode, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.